guests are laughing here. I think it's at my music. You'd better stop that. I better tell them who you are. Big Sister, of course, is your character, and your name is Grace Matthews. You've been on this program before. I was trying to think of what character.
As Margot in The Shadow.
Right, yes. And Mr. Paul McGrath, who was? Tell them who you were.
On Big Sister, I was John Wayne, the idiot husband.
The what husband?
The wayward and not very bright husband. But I had a very good excuse. My head had been damaged in the war. I don't know whether I was shot or what. Actually, I was supposed to be a very distinguished doctor, but my memory was not very good, so I was not always too bright.
He'd be good as a television doctor, really. He looks maybe a psychiatrist.
Yes, quite a few of them. Quite recently, I did a very intricate heart transplant on Grace's show, on Guiding Light.
Guiding Light is the only show that's really left over from radio on TV, isn't it? Is there another soap?
I don't believe so.
No, I think that's the only one.
I was telling Paul McGrath that I've been touring to plug my book, and I was in Minneapolis, I think, and I turned on the TV, which I never do during the day, but it was a color TV, and I had nothing to do between radio and TV shows, and the Guiding Light was on.
Yes.
And I was so surprised that it was still on the air, because I never watched soap operas.
No. Well, it's been on a long time as a 15-minute show, and then last September, it became a half-hour show.
It's a wonder that more of the radio soap operas didn't make it into television.
Yes, it is.
Strange.
They talked about ours for a while.
Yes, they did. I was just going to say, Paul. I don't know whatever happened, but they did talk about Big Sister.
Actually, I think Guiding Light is the only one that ever was simultaneously both the radio and television show. So if you were on it, you did both. You had a call to do the radio show in the morning and then rehearse the television show in the afternoon, which you did the next day.
Well, Paul, I think there was one other.
Young Dr. Malone, was it?
Brighter Day. Right. And you did the radio in the morning and the television in the afternoon. This was only 15 minutes in each case.
Well, they all were at first, yes.
But we did the radio show without the script, because this particular director liked realism in radio. And, of course, it helped you tremendously for the television show in the afternoon. So you learned the script.
Who was the director?
Bob Steele.
Bob Steele.
Mm-hmm.
I remember he used to have an overhead mic.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Very, very sensitive.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I didn't know you were on Guiding Light. I guess I must have missed that segment that one day I was watching it.
I guess I wasn't on that day, maybe. Oh, I'm not on every day. I couldn't do it. It's a long rehearsal.
Yeah, it was very nice even of you to come here, because you had, a performance and a rehearsal today?
Well, we start at 8:15 in the morning, and we finish at 3:45, and then we start at 4 to rehearse for the next day. So, it's a long day.
It makes for a fairly full day.
Yes.
People don't quite understand, do they, when you explain that you can't go to dinner with them or something?
Yes.
They say, why? All you have to do is go on. It only takes you a half hour to play the show.
And I love getting former co-stars together, particularly radio co-stars, because usually they haven't seen each other in a long time. And I found, I think, when I called you about a month ago to see if you were interested in doing this, that you were spending the evening together and having dinner together.
That's right.
Well, we're very old and very close friends, the Bensons and the McGraths. Grace is Mrs. Benson. And Court is a very close friend of mine, her husband.
Court Benson, very well-known actor. Yeah.
Yes. And Grace, when she does Guiding Light now, I lived just down the street from here, incidentally, on 39th and Park. Grace, more often than not, if she has a heavy part the next day, sleeps in our apartment.
Oh, it's so wonderful.
I didn't want to mention that, actually. I think, even though you were married in the eyes of the people.
It's all right. We're well chaperoned
by my. It's so wonderful, because sometimes it does get a little, rugged commuting. And Paul and Anne have just been a haven for me. I can go and stay there when things get, I get tired and have a lovely relaxing time.
I had a lady write to me not too long ago, I think it was around Christmas time, and she said that she had such a pleasant experience because she turned on the radio in the morning, and she'd often heard my program, but she'd never heard it in the morning. She didn't even know it was repeated again in the morning in New York. I don't think it is in California. And she said, I just happened to be doing my ironing, and there was Mary Jane Higbee. Just like she used to be.
Oh, that's lovely.
She said you can't iron the television like you could the radio.
No, isn't that lovely? Yes. Well, Mary Jane's book has been a great success, hasn't it?
Yes, tremendous. As a matter of fact, it was when she was here a few months ago, I said to her, gee, I hope Nostalgia Book Club buys your book, because it bought both of mine and distributed them. And I got an announcement in the mail the other day that, yes, that was going to be the next book.
Oh, that's good. That's wonderful.
Which is called Tune In Tomorrow, by the way. We must plug it.
Yes.
Because I've seen it all around. I've been all over the country in the last few months. Dr. John Wayne, tell us about your child. You were telling me the child in the...
We had an ageless little boy. A little boy was played by a number of actors. Actually, I think it was played for a long time by one of the specialists in child voices. Usually there were women. There were two, Madeline Pierce.
Mm-hmm. Who was the other?
And Madeline Lee.
How is it you wouldn't use a child? There were a lot of radio child actors.
Well, we did have a child. In the very beginning, we had Jim Amici's son. Jim was the announcer. The little boy was at that time 4 and, of course, hadn't learned to read. So Jim would have to teach it to him by rote.
Jim was the announcer,
Jim was the announcer, yes. And then later on, he did get a little bit older. And we had trouble. We never got a really good one until we ended up with Jim Bowles' wife.
Athena Lord.
Athena Lord.
She was marvelous, wasn't she?
She was absolutely wonderful. Mm. Yes.
Mm.
What kind of mail did you get? Most of the people who played title roles in the soap operas got either letters giving advice or letters asking advice. What big sister?
Mostly giving advice, I think, about how I should, you know. Poor Ruth, she had so many problems, and they were usually trying to help her with them, you know. They didn't really think I was capable of giving advice, I guess, because mostly they were giving it to me.
Well, your life was a constant state of turmoil, as I remember it.
Oh, it was. And
well, that was the essence of the soap opera, as you very well know.
Sure.
The name of the game.
Yes.
They seldom had happy segments, did they? In any of them, come to think of it, they'd have a good time.
Yes, but
yes, Christmas
it was very fleeting, you know.
Yes. Usually by the end of the segment, the organ would thunder and there would be some ominous note that something was going to happen.
Yes.
Storm clouds were gathering.
Yes.
Was it Glen Falls we were trying to remember?
Yes, it was.
Glens
Falls. Because there is a Glen Falls, New York, isn't there?
Yes,
there is.
And this, I think, was... So it was Glens Falls, which was not in New York. Where were we?
Well, they never did say.
No, they never really did say. You had a feeling it was the Middle West somehow, didn't you?
But it was upper middle class suburbia, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, doctor's wife, you would be.
Yes, yes. But did you ever place it mentally? It was sort of what part of the United States?
No, I think he meant Glen Falls, actually.
Oh, do you?
He didn't want to say, because... Whenever we took trips, we'd go to New York.
That's right.
And when I was in one of my bad amnesiac spells...
Yes.
I would always end up in New York.
Yeah.
Usually on a West Side hotel. In a dreadful room, or on the Bowery or something. Because I think, among other things, he became alcoholic.
At one point, yes. Mm. Yes.
My letters on Big Sister usually berated me.
Oh, did they, Paul?
Yes, for not treating Big Sister better. There were some who sort of understood me. It's very odd because on other programs, Inner Sanctum, for example, where I was a spooky character, I had proposals of marriage and all kinds of, friendly letters wanting to correspond, wanting to keep up a long correspondence and form some kind of an attachment with me.
Yes, I asked Paul McGrath while we were waiting for you, as a matter of fact, about Raymond. Or somehow we got talking about Raymond, and he said he was the original host on Inner Sanctum, which I didn't know.
Yeah. Raymond Edward Johnson.
Yes. Tell them, would you, how he got the name, or how the name...
Well, the name Raymond came, of course, from Raymond's name, and he wanted his own name used as a credit on the program. Highbrow, who owned the show, said that... he couldn't do that because that would destroy the essence of the character, which was anonymity. The host was just someone that you had to picture, but you couldn't actually put a name on him. So they compromised finally by settling on Ray using his first name, Raymond. And when Ray went off to the war and I took over the part, I inherited his name and I became Raymond for the 10 years that I played. I also did it on television. But I never appeared. There again, I was a light.
People often ask me about Raymond Johnson. He's such a fine actor. He's living in Vermont. I don't know if you knew that.
Yes, I knew that, yes, Richard. Yes. He's not well. He's been ill, unfortunately, but he was a wonderful actor and a delightful chap.
He used to live in the town where we live, in Chappaqua, and so many people, you know, knowing that Court and I are in the theater, say, oh, you know, remembering Ray, say, oh, what do you hear about Ray? Where is he, you know? And he hasn't lived there for a long, long time, but everybody just adored him there.
Well, how's Nettie?
Nettie is our son.
Whatever happened to the...
No, Nettie was the brother, wasn't he? The brother.
The
naughty brother.
Brother. Yeah. Yes, Mickey.
He was a heartache.
Yes, Mickey. Yes,
yeah. Heartache to you, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, at times, yes. Yes, he was.
Well, he became a garage mechanic, and that was slightly below his station, I think.
Yes.
And that upset you because you wanted him to go on and become a PhD and everything.
Yes.
And then he married Hope.
That's right. Then that's when the trouble started. I don't know where Mickey O'Day is, the actor who played
him. I don't either. I think he had the good sense to long since leave this crazy business.
Charity, I think, would have been a better name for that girl.
Yes, I'm very inclined.
How about that?
Give everything away.
You can tell that on the air. What you told me before about the time you thought you were preempted, or you were preempted.
Well, I won't give the actress's name, but there was an actress who, a number of actresses played it, but the actress who played it at this particular time, they're very prone to be late. I think you know who I mean.
Grace. Yes.
And she was always getting in everybody's hair. One day she came very late, as usual, and President Roosevelt, I think, was going to make a speech. And we thought we would be preempted, but we weren't absolutely sure. So Anne came in, and Anne, I've given that part of it away.
Lots of Anne's.
And read the first read-through, and then she dashed out and said, excuse me, and in the time that she was out, we learned that we were indeed preempted and we were not going to be on the air. So Ted Houston, who was then directing, remember, what a nice chap he was, he said, let's play a little joke on Anne and play the first scene, but play it your own way, interpolate whatever you like. And it was a scene where we met on the street, John Wayne and Hope. And Hope was sort of making a play for John. Well, I stuck to the script for about two or three lines, and then I would depart just a little bit, and I'd throw in things like, what do you mean, or what did you have in mind exactly? You want to come up to my apartment? What do we do when we get there? Well, did you mean, do you want to have a... Poor Anne was dying. Finally, Ted had to rescue her. I think I got a little too explicit, and Ted rushed out. Said, no, it's all right, Anne. We're not on the air.
Oh, I think that was before I was on the show, Paul.
Yes, it was, yes.
There were, you know, several big sisters. How many, Paul?
Well, there were four.
Oh,
Alice Frost and Mercedes McCambridge. Librella played it for a while.
Did she?
Mm-hmm. And then...
And the actress who died, Paul.
Oh, yes. Margie Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely woman.
And I was the final one.
When did it go off the air, exactly?
52?
I think it was.
1952.
I'm very vague about
that. 51 or 52, I'd say. And I had played it for the 5 years before that. But how many years was Big Sister on?
I think about 17 or 18.
17 or 18.
We don't have commercials on this program because it's a non-commercial station, but I don't think I'm going to be able to avoid it because I've got an old recording of the beginning of Big Sister, and I'm going to put it in here, this part of the tape, because I think a lot of the young people would like to know how it sounded.
Renzo presents Big Sister. Yes, there's the clock in Glen Falls Town Hall telling us it's time for Renzo's story of Big Sister, brought to you by the new soapy rich Renzo. R-I-M-S-O.
Did you get a lifetime supply of Renzo?
Well, quite a bit.
Do they still make Renzo?
Well, no, I don't remember Renzo anymore. I think it's Tide. Well, I don't bold.
Rinso White, is that
right? Rinso White. White.
Yes, I don't I know that the most recent, you know, a bounty that I got, I don't think had Rinso in. I think it was...
I got that big package,
yes,
too, from P&G.
But I don't... But bold and all the other things, all those new things, you know.
No, I remember being in Gristini's one day, and a little old lady came in and said, I'd like a box of Rinso White. Remember the way they
yes, say, happy little wash day song, right?
Yes, yes.
You know, I was in Chicago a few weeks ago, and I managed to locate Myrtle Vale, whom everyone thought was dead, of Mert and Marge.
Mm-hmm.
She's alive, and she
oh,
said she's
really?
Writing a TV script now. She said it might be a bit too racy for TV. She might have to do it as a movie instead. Yeah, she lives right in Chicago.
How interesting.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I didn't meet her because I had a plane to catch, and I
yes.
only had a couple of hours.
Oh, they were so wonderful.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you also about some of the other programs you played on radio. You were Margot, you were Big Sister.
And... Yes, and then for, oh, I don't know, about 3 years, I guess, I played the lead on Hilltop House, which was a story...
Oh, I remember that.
Story about an orphanage. Those were the only sort of three regular ones, but I think...
Was that written by Addie and...
Mm-hmm.
Addie
Richton and Lynn Stone wrote that, yes.
What were you telling me before Grace Matthews arrived, Mr. McGrath, about changing from P&G to Procter & Gamble to...
Oh, it was from Lever Brothers to Procter & Gamble. I think it's the only time it ever happened.
Yeah, most unusual.
Yes, it was.
From what was the
product? Because they were cutthroat competitors. Well, they were both soaps. Well, what is Lever's favorite soap?
Well, isn't Lever's Rinso?
I think that was
that's
Rinso.
That's where the
yes.
Rinso, I mm-hmm. think.
And that's what
yes.
we used for a long time. We even yes. had a quartet in the studio for a long time who sang little Rinso ditties.
Well, so what was because...
Andy Love.
Commercials had to be live for a long time.
Of
I don't know
yes,
when that went on.
Yes, they did. Well, when did the switch over come, Paul?
It came about 7 or 8 years before we went off the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was because Julian was not... Julian Font, who wrote and owned it, was not getting enough money out of it, he thought.
Oh.
And he had a clause that allowed him to cancel Lever contract, and they never thought he would take advantage of it, if they failed to give notice on a certain date, which they failed to do. And he promptly took over and became the owner, all in the space of about 24 hours. And he knew, because he had talked to the Procter & Gamble chaps, that he could sell it to them, which he promptly did. So we didn't miss a day on the air. We just... change sponsors midstream.
That's fascinating, Paul. I've never known that story because,
yes.
again, that predates me, you know.
And then Julian became the
I knew.
Sole
well, he,
owner.
You see, he owned the show when I came on. I didn't know that's how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought of another product that I think is non-existent anymore, and it was very big on the soaps, was Super Suds.
Yes.
Yes,
I don't think they
no,
make that anymore.
No,
do they?
I don't either.
I don't think so, no.
With Super Suds, lots more suds with Super Suds. You see what my mind is chock full of? We mentioned The Guiding Light a few minutes ago, and I also have a recording of the beginning of that, which is different than the TV version. That's one of the things I found so shocking.
Oh.
It's a quite a different opening.
Oh, is it?
You have
is
the
it?
Music,
a biblical
the whole thing.
Does it have a quote?
It was very pompous and quite religious. As a matter of fact, let's put it in here now. And we'll talk about it after the people hear it.
The Guiding Light. Brought to you by the makers of P&G Soap, the white naphtha soap.
No, it is. As a matter of fact, I remember that... The Guiding Light on religious holidays, and I think even holidays like Thanksgiving, had the town pastor, whoever that would have been, you know, who was a running character also in the episodes, because that had changing episodes. They didn't have running characters, right?
Right, I think so.
You know,
so.
They would have, like, stories about someone in the town for 4 or 5 weeks, and then
yes.
that would end.
Yes, that's right. It had a slightly different format.
My husband always used to play the pastor... On Good Friday.
On Guiding Light?
On Guiding Light.
And
we
did a long...
This was on television.
Oh.
Now
well,
I...
then they do the same thing.
Yeah. But this was quite a while ago when it was a 15-minute show.
Well, I think he had the whole show, a 15-minute
He had the whole
sermon.
Show because it was seven last words of Christ, you know, the Sermon on the Mount.
Well, I was never terribly religious, and I remember I always tuned it out when the sermons came. It was always a 15-minute sermon.
Yes.
It was very pompously delivered, I remember that.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it was just sort of nothing that it was absolutely directly from scriptures.
Yeah. Would you much prefer radio? I mean, if the money were the same to doing TV. Be honest now.
Mm-hmm. I think, to be honest, everyone would.
Oh, yes.
It was so absurdly easy. Yeah. You do five or six shows a day, if you could get them. And it worked in a little sort of clique circle, so that the same people you met on every show.
Were you ever amused by the stories? Those, I think, on Big Sister were less ridiculous than some, but... Did you think they were campy at the time?
Yes, we kidded about them.
Yes, we did. But
then when it came right down to doing it, we were pretty serious
about
it.
Yes, you can't kid about something that you're going to do, you know.
Do you remember any of the situations at all?
Paul?
No, I could only remember my general situation of wandering in and out with my amnesia.
I can't remember any.
Having a love affair with Hope.
Yeah, we were discussing that also. Now, that you're the only show that I remember that really had, and I don't remember it, Mr. McGrath tells me you had, you know, adultery on it, but most of them were just mild flirtations. Usually it was someone was ill or someone was broke or hurt in an automobile accident.
No, this was, I guess it was the only one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were ahead of your time because there's plenty on TV.
Yes.
Now it's...
We were just saying the other day that it's funny, and I know it's not... deliberate, but if one storyline starts on a television soap, another one will have the same thing. I mean, if somebody's going blind, there'll be, and it's not copied, you know, but everyone's mind seems to work. Or if there's somebody has murdered somebody, then on the next show somebody's murdered something, so that suddenly if you turn on 3 or 4 in the afternoon, they seem to fall into a similarity of themes. Have you ever...
Yes, I remember. I once did Young Widder Brown, and there was a long sequence on it about one of the main characters becoming desperately ill with a very mysterious allergy. And it turned out that the allergy was to chocolate. And they had gone ahead, I think, and actually said this on the air before they discovered that Baker's Chocolate was one of the sponsors.
Oh.
And there was hell to pay. Heads fell all over the place.
Well, they could change the diagnosis, maybe.
Well, they did, no doubt, but I think it was too late. It had been mentioned.
Yes.
It's odd that, and I think this is true of most people who work in radio, that they can't remember the plots, and yet I don't remember the plots either. I have a very good memory. But I remember the characters very vividly, and yet I can't... I was thinking just when we were talking, I wanted to ask you about Portia Faces Life. Is she the actress that died? I can't even think of her name.
No, that's Lucille Wall, who played
Portia.
Who was Portia.
Well, there was an actress who was the title role of a soap opera, and she died. Ann Elsner, Stella Dallas, told me this. I can't think of
Well,
who
would it
be
the girl who was on...
I think it was Joan Blair.
That's it.
Oh,
who was she? Who would she play?
I forget. Name some of the other ones.
It wasn't Young Widder Brown.
No, it wasn't Young Widder Brown, and it was a CBS show.
Mary Marlin.
A very popular one. It may have been Mary Marlin.
Rosemary?
No, Rosemary
Amanda
came,
of Honeymoon
came
Hill.
Later.
That
no, that I'll
that
always
today.
Remember.
Yeah.
That wonderful opening. The story of a beautiful girl laid in the hills of South Carolina. They actually said for a couple
of years. Did they kid about it at the time?
Yes, but they said it without saying it. Whoever wrote it thought it was perfectly good copy.
Well, it wasn't Argyle Sunday that Joan Blair was on. Or Helen Trent.
No. Helen Trent and Argyle Sunday have both been here. It's Vivian Smolin.
Yes, and Julie.
Julie Stephen. Mm,
I saw Julie recently. You know,
she looks
moved
great,
to,
doesn't she?
She moved to Pittsburgh, you know.
No. She's living in Armonk, I guess not too far from you.
Yes, that's right. Well, her husband's with U.S. Steel, and he was moved to Pittsburgh.
Gee, I was there a few weeks ago. I'd love to have seen her. I don't know a soul there.
Well,
I didn't see a soul that I wanted to know. So
I know she'd love to see you. They moved there last June. And she was here recently, just visiting for a short time. She misses New York terribly.
Yeah, I imagine she would. Mm. She's very pretty. She reminds me a bit of Lorraine Day.
Yes,
I think
she does.
She has those laughing eyes.
Beautiful eyes.
Yeah.
Just lovely.
Yeah. She said she misses it very much, but because of children, she didn't want to work in it again. As a matter of fact, she didn't even sit in for our photograph, I think.
I remember that she couldn't, because we were going to come in together, and I remember she couldn't.
I think one of her daughters was sick that day. I think she has two daughters.
Two daughters, yes.
Yeah. I'm getting so I know all of you pretty well.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
I feel like I'm part of the radio,
that's
radio family. I particularly like Big Sister because I was an only child, and I lived with my grandmother.
Yes.
I keep saying I'm an only child, and I said that recently at a party, and someone said, that's very obvious. I don't know why you keep mentioning that. But I thought, wouldn't it be nice to have a big sister?
Yes.
But you weren't really the type one would lean on, really. I think people were... you always had so many troubles.
I know, they can.
Oh, but people did lean on you, though, Grace.
They leaned, but I don't know whether they got the support that should have. But they really, yes, they did.
Oh, they did. You helped Nettie, and you helped Hope. Reed Bannister was the name.
Oh, Reed Bannister, yes.
Gee, there's a name. I haven't heard that name today.
Yes.
Well, Reed Bannister was. He was my best friend, but he was also
in love with
Ruth.
Ruth, yes. But.
And this was an impossible situation.
Yes.
But Ruth did not cheat.
Ruth was very, very honorable. Yes. But
at one point, I think when John had to be put away.
Oh,
they almost got to the point of declaring their love, didn't they?
Yes, I think so.
I think maybe he did. Yes. You didn't. You remained loyal.
Oh, no, I never would. Who's that marvelous actor who played Reed Bannister?
Barry Kroger.
Barry Kroger. Fine actor.
Were you a general practitioner the few days you were practicing anything?
sort of. And actually specializing in surgery.
Oh,
brain surgery, no doubt.
Mary Jane Higby told me, I think it was she, who said that was on one of her programs, Nora Drake, I think it was, she said that all the amnesia business started. Some bright writer got the idea for it, and she said then it went right through the soap operas like the flu. Everybody had amnesia.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think it's a rather uncommon condition.
I believe it is.
Yes, I'm sure.
But it was very common indeed on the world of the super real world of daytime radio.
Do you ever, I suppose at the time people recognized your voice, but do they ever anymore? Well, they would from television. They'd recognize you on sight, huh?
At sight now from television, but as the character on television, not... They would never think of me as Big Sister, you know.
Is that annoying to you, being recognized as a former radio actor?
No. I think it's rather nice, don't you?
It's very nice indeed.
It always seems to me it happens at the wrong times. Anytime I've been with film stars, you know, we're in a hurry or in the middle of dinner or something, and people come over and they ask the wrong questions. No?
Yes.
Yes, it can be a nuisance. But we're both what they used to call legitimate actors, really.
Mm.
And radio was kind of a sideline for both Grace and me. I was always doing a play and frequently had to do my chore on the radio by a special telephone line that was set up in my dressing room. Not a soap opera, of course.
No, but you used to do In a Sanctum that way, didn't you?
And yes. I did FBI and Peace and War and Crime Doctor. Did all three.
Gee, that's very impressive. The others were in the studio and you had
your earphones and could just come in.
Is it harder? It must be a strange feeling.
Yes, in FBI and Peace and War, I was the narrator, so it was comparatively easy. I could come in on the music cue, and I knew just pretty much what the organist would do. In the other one, in Crime Doctor, I was the lead, Dr. Ordway, the psychiatrist... crime solver. And that was pretty difficult because I had to play with people who were not there.
It must be very difficult, Paul.
But he was a pretty pompous sort of fellow who just gave out with the, you know, opinions that solved everything.
Mm.
Adding 2 and 2 and making 68.
Everyone else looking like fools, you know.
What about Inner Sanctum? How did you do that?
Well, that was easy because I did just the opening and the middle and the close. Mm. And I'd talk to High on the telephone. He'd tell me about time.
Mm-hmm. Would you come back sometime and be crime doctor for me? Because I see I've got 1 minute left, and I'm just going to have to say goodbye. So will you come back and do a half an hour as crime doctor?
Sure.
And who was your helper? You can bring him along. He had some kind of an assistant. They all
yes,
did.
I had two. Walter Grisey was one. He was a commissioner of police. Well, I forget who the other was, but I'll remember.
Good. It was fun visiting with you, and I appreciate very much, particularly you, Grace Matthews, because you had such a busy day, and you've got to catch a train now.
Oh, well, it's been a pleasure being here.
Good.
I enjoyed it very much.
Good. I'm glad you did. And Paul McGrath, you come back again, would you?
I will indeed. Thank you very
good.
Much.
We've been talking today with Miss Grace Matthews and Paul McGrath, who were the characters, lead characters, on a very well-remembered soap opera of the 1930s and 40s, right into the 50s. Big Sister. And until next week at the same time, this is Richard Lamparski. Thank you for listening. Good night.